Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Another night of Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, we've started up recently, not only doing our main show on Thursday nights, but also starting to have these special shows during our primetime slots on Friday and Saturday nights. So we're really excited that we were able to get these great guests to come in and talk about their gifts, their books, and all the work that they're doing and stuff like that, and that we're actually kind of overflowing in abundance with these great people that we can talk to, that we've actually had to go a little bit outside the scope of our normal Thursday night schedule to be able to bring this to you. So as always, we'd like to thank everybody for all your comments and feedback and everything about the show, and we're really excited about how everything has been unfolding. If you've been following everything on our website at spiritualconnectionsradio.com, you know that we just started a new radio show this past Monday called Animal Mystic. We have Heather Tobin, who is going to be running a show every Monday talking about animals, not only from the aspect of just general knowledge about animals and the work that she does with shelters and rescues, but also with getting into the spiritual aspects of it, of communication of your pets after they pass over, animal totems, and all kinds of great spiritual tools and everything. So make sure to check out her show on Monday nights from 8 to 9, and she's our new addition to Spiritual Connections Radio. So with that, I'd like to bring in my host, Pam. Pam, are you there?
Hi, yes, I am here. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Spiritual Connections Radio, and thank you for that introduction. How are you doing, Mark?
Good, good. It's always great having you on. And, you know, before we take off on our guest here and everything, why don't you tell everybody about the Sister Network and how they can find out more about your website?
Well, thank you. There is a sister network to Spiritual Connections that Mark and I started maybe a little over a year ago. And this new network is called, very simply, Pamela Latour Radio, and we have a series of shows on as well relating to health, wellness, spirituality. There's several different shows, and I won't go into them. If you're interested in going and checking out the shows, you can go to Pamela Latour, Latour, radio, .com. Thank you, Mark.
Oh, it's great to always hear about the shows and all the great things you got going on over there.
Thank you. Well, let's get right into the guest tonight, because I'm so anxious to hear what she has to say. I know you've read her book, and I am so anxious to do the same thing. Let me introduce her. Her name is Tosha Silver, and she is the author of the popular book Outrageous Openness, Living the Divine. Letting the Divine Take the Lead. And she's recently put out a new book called Make Me Your Own, Poems to the Divine Beloved, which sounds amazing. She loves to teach about divine order and how to really allow a divine plan to take over our lives, far beyond the manipulations and constraints of the mind's plan. So with that said, let me welcome Tosha Silver.
Hey, thank you, Pam, and thanks for having me here, both of you. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much
for
being here.
It's great to have you on, and if it's okay with you, I just want to talk to people about how I found out about you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, being a spiritual teacher and someone who is a great seeker and enjoys learning from so many different people, reading so many books, you know, Pamela Tor has actually been one of my blessed teachers that I've had in my life also, with a lot of the great teachings.
Thank you.
That's actually how I met her. And, you know, I was basically going through a lot of what we're going to talk about on the radio show, which is the struggles of kind of fully understanding, or maybe we think we understand how to manifest things, and realizing that, you know, sometimes as much knowledge as we have, that we're not seeing things manifest, and we're kind of frustrated with that and stuff like that. So I know one of my friends who I was sharing some of my life experiences with kind of said, you know what, I have a book for you, and they handed me your book as a gift. And I sat down, and I don't normally, a lot of people know me, they know I don't normally read books. And I think I sat down and I read your, and it's a good-sized book, it's not small, but I sat down and I think I stayed up all night and I read your entire book in one sitting. And it was just like I couldn't inhale it fast enough as far as the knowledge and everything that was in it, stories that you were sharing. It was just, it really touched me as far as the writing, and I really appreciate the gift that you've given everybody. And I, you know, for people who haven't checked it out, make sure to go and pick up her book. We have a saying between me and my brother, and that is, anything that makes our lives easier is a good thing. And
yeah.
this is definitely a book that you want to kind of incorporate. I'm not going to say that it's totally a really religious book, because that's not what it's meant to be, but I can tell you that it's been an interesting circle for me, because, you know, I came from a very interesting upbringing of Baptist. And my grandparents were actually Baptist ministers, and my family was very strong in the church. And then I did my path in the ELCA Lutheran Church for quite a few years as an elder, and different responsibilities within the church structure of that for almost 25 years. And, you know, I kind of believe in my own journey that I've kind of gone off on this whole spiritual thing. And it's not to say that I walked away from any of the teachings, but I definitely got away from what I would call the dogma of the church structure.
Mm-hmm.
And in my own way, almost kind of getting away from, you know, really praying or doing things that would directly connect me with divine guidance and stuff like that, and kind of going to guides and angels and other different types of beings for a lot of my guidance. And being guilty as what we're going to talk about soon, which is going to other people and looking for guidance outside of myself, using that as a crutch for quite a while, and an addiction for certain years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as part of that process, you know, it's interesting because your book kind of almost did a full circle for me, because it brought me back into not the dogma structure of the church, but back into divine guidance and being able to really use those tools to do and add into a lot of the spirituality I had. So with that,
I have to respond to what you just said, because my whole body's kind of covered with chills. Can I respond
Please.
To what you said? Because really, you just nailed, honestly, why. I mean, the book has many, many different demographics of people that have found it. You know, it's been found in the yoga world, and it's been found in the, you know, exhausted by manifestation world and all that. But a huge demographic of who's found it are people that, because I am not about religion. I'm not that I'm against religion. If it works for somebody, that's great. But, you know, anyone who reads the book, I'm the most eclectic, outside the box person, and I don't like rules and regulations, because I think that once you contact the divine, you get your own inner rules that have nothing to do with dogma. They're not even rules. It's like a love affair that just emerges on its own, and you just begin to know from the inside what to do, and even some of the rules just become ludicrous. You're like, I'm busy having this love affair with the divine. What are you telling me I need to do X, Y, and Z for? Because the inner guidance gets so clear. So when you were, I was really so moved when you were saying this stuff about your background and coming full circle because, I mean, really, my eyes were, like, filling up with tears because I've gotten that letter so many times from people that grew up, you know, either fundamentalist Christian or, you know, my background is I have seven rabbis. In, you know, as a Jew, there were seven rabbis in my family, and I grew up knowing that I was in love with some force that was in, you know, the lawn outside and the trees, and I could feel it. There was something touching me, but I knew that it had nothing to do with all these rules and stratifications that everybody was trying to get me to follow, and I somehow, something led me to just follow that love, and your story that you just said, I've heard so many different versions of, and it's so fulfilling to me because it's almost like that force of love, for better or worse, has kind of been, in my mind, sort of appropriated by all these rules and regimens and all these things. And it's really not even just religions. It's even regimens in the yoga world and people that say, you know, you must say this for 21 times or it won't work or whatever the rules are. In the end, the way I see it is that force of love really could care less. What it cares about is you having an engagement with it and inviting it in and offering all problems and concerns to it. And it really, to me, is like having a love affair that anybody could have, but the door has to be unlocked at least, if not opened. And so I really think it's like reclaiming that love that has been, you know, turned into all these different dogmas.
Wow.
That's beautiful. I love that.
What were you going to say, Pam?
I was going to ask about the beginnings of this. You know, and I can't wait to get into the book itself. Especially the second one, Make Me Your Own, Poems of the Divine Beloved. It sounds so much like, you know, I'm not a religious person either. And I think if I had chose a religion some point in my life, I probably would have chosen Sufism, which is
yes,
which is the Divine Beloved. That's the
yes,
whole focus. And I know the Torah is somewhat wrapped in that as well. And I know you have a background in Judaism. How does
well,
that change?
Not for,
how does
wasn't
that
for long,
your
but
focus?
Yes. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how did that shape you at this moment? How did it shape your focus? I know you've done a lot of, your path has taken you in a lot of different directions. You did readings for a long time. Mark had mentioned right before the show started that you did these amazing amount of readings through the years. And, you know, what I really want to know is how do you think you've come to this level of love? What brought you here?
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I think, you know, when I was joking about the Judaism, it was more that I think one of the things, kind of going back to Mark was just saying, because I really am sort of this person that my nature is not to want rules and restrictions from the outside, that there was always some part, maybe from the time I was born, and that came from my mother, of just, I wanted to know what was true for me. And I actually think everybody has that somewhere, but not everybody has the permission or the drive to keep plugging away to learn that. And I think that was actually part of the book eventually, was to say how everybody has that connection to say who am I really? What am I separate from all these ideas that people are telling me of what I should be, including spiritual or religious ideas? But I think what happened is that to go to the readings first, my background was as an astrologer and also as an intuitive, and that just happened on its own. I never really went looking for it. I got out of Yale with a degree in English literature thinking I was going to be a writer. And then I just started spontaneously for fun giving readings to friends because I had been obsessed with astrology. And one thing led to another, and 30 years went by, literally. It was all just word-of-mouth insanity of all these people that wanted their charts done. And that's what supported me for a long time, except about 20 years into that, and now I've stopped all astrology readings. I still use astrology, though. But about 20 years into that, this very deep feeling started to emerge that is what we all were discussing before we went on air, that it was, I understood where people were coming from, but I deeply wanted to show people how to connect to that guidance and love inside themselves, as opposed to running to a reader to say, tell me, do I do this or that? Tell me, do I leave this person or do I take this job? Or, you know, tell me when it's going to get better. That was like the biggest question. Tell me when it's going to get better. And I realized, as much as I think doing charts is a beautiful art form that I still love, I had to stop because I wanted to really write and teach about, it's almost like a post-astrological, post-manifestation, post all this, you know, trying to make it better or wait for this Disneyland time where you actually can invite this force that's always just there waiting right now into the life and take any practical issue or question and know what to do. Based on the offering, I think the key to both books is that we're simply, for the most part, not taught to offer things over. We're taught to say, oh, I've got to figure this out. I've got to figure that out. What do I want? And even in the manifesting world, although I believe that we create vibrationally through what we believe, that's a very tiny part of the picture, and that, in fact, once things are offered to the divine, really, like, the perfect relationship is picked if that's what the person wants, or the perfect work is picked if that's what the person wants, that this offering to the highest vibration is so completely different than making a shopping list of these are the things my ego needs, that act just shifts the whole universe. And so that's really kind of become the foundation of everything I'm writing about. And I guess it came out of my own dealing with these 30,000 readings, going, people keep coming back over and over, but they're still not knowing that it's inside. And I think I have some useful tools for helping with that.
That's lovely. It's a great answer. Can I ask you a question about problems?
Yeah.
You mentioned that people would come to you and say, when is this going to stop? When am I going to make this? How is this going to work for me?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of a thing that I've been working on in my own life lately, because, I like most people, I think, in the middle of the night, I wake up with insights. It's like somebody talking in my ear. And last night, I woke up with this concept that the issues in my life, for example, I have a 21-year-old son who is not moving in the direction that I think would make him happy, and I was worried about him. Or, and everybody always has issues in their life.
Right.
Like this. Everything is from little things to big things.
Right.
Now, in the middle of the night last night, I woke up with this idea that all of the issues that I've got going in my life, the things that I'm not exceedingly happy about, they're like a snarled ball of yarn that I created by generating the equal and opposing forces that created that problem to begin with. Now, you know, I used to have this ex-husband who had, whose mother was a Jehovah's Witness, and her focus was all, it's God's will, it's God's will, it's God's will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, I used to think, well, you know, that's sort of an immature sort of father-child concept of God. But the more I go, the more I realize that by focusing, releasing issues, by releasing issues to the divine, not a fatherly figure, but this concept of divinity that we are, and releasing those issues to the divine unraveled that yarn.
Yes.
Do you agree with me? Do you know where I'm going?
I completely know where you're going. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm really glad that you're bringing it up. It's funny because I got this email the other day. So I get a lot of emails about these topics, and I got this email the other day from a guy, and he said, look, I grew up, I read your book. A lot of times people read the book several times to really get the hang of it, because he goes, I read it the first time. It was just like a wild romp, and I laughed, and I had a great time. And then he said, but I went back, and I read it again, and I realized, wow, I grew up as a fundamentalist Christian. How is this different than just saying, you know, give it all to the guy in the sky and don't worry about anything. And he goes, I really, you know, tell me. And I don't always answer my emails, but I realized it was important because to me it's a fusion of two things. That it's just what you're saying, Pam. Part of the big difference is it's not some pie in the sky. It's ourselves as the divinity. And so the release, the offering, is to our own great self inside. So there's no, it's not like, you know, we are the worm and, you know, we are bowing before the great one. It's like we are the divinity. However, inside of this form, there is the egoic mind that constantly wants to micromanage and run everything and create complete insanity through its attachments and addictions. And then there's the great self inside of us, right, that we're just seldom taught outside of the venue of religion. We're seldom taught to offer stuff over. And a lot of people will be like, well, I don't want to offer it over because it brings back the memories of all this religious junk I grew up with. But as soon as you're knowing it's the divine inside and that you're really, just what you're saying, you're really offering it to be untangled to this great power of wisdom inside that is waiting to handle it. I'm always amazed myself because I think a lot of people find who are very cerebral, very intellectual, because that's my background too, and they have these very smart, agitated minds that aren't necessarily good at solving their own problems, which is totally described for me, you know, especially earlier on when my mind would come in and rip something apart like a Doberman pincher trying to figure it out. And when that act of offering, I'm going to give you an example from the book. Like, you could take a situation where you say, I don't know, lately people have been writing me about housing a lot, and, you know, you're saying, this woman's like, well, I could be moving here, and I could be moving there, and how do I decide, and how do I know, and what's the sign, and, you know, my coach is telling me to think of all the things I want to manifest, but it's not coming. And as soon as you're saying, this entire issue is now offered to the divine. The perfect housing is now selected in the perfect location and will arrive at the right time in the right way. And then I use a lot of techniques in the book that are very simple, just like you make a God box and you write the perfect home, stick it in the God box. And I do change me prayers, which I love, which are things like, change me into someone who can relax and receive the perfect home. I mean, you can make them for anything because some people have enormous trouble receiving, and that's part of... So I look at it like a lot of the mind can't solve the mind's own problems. I guess it's a different way of saying what you just said.
No.
However,
Albert Einstein said that you can't fix the problem from the position you were in when you made it.
Exactly, and I actually use his quote in Outrageous Openness, so you'll like it, that you can't solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that created it. And that's why I wrote the book, basically, is because of Albert Einstein's quote. And that so much manifestation work is from that same consciousness. Because I know I'm going on, but you guys are great at sparking stuff. It's, to me, one of the really key things in all this is it can be so great to release the word my. I do this all the time. Like, I'll go, rather than thinking of it as, and in my book, I'll just call it the book. Or I'll call it the whatever, because as soon as the release is off of Maya, and you can even do it with your kids, your lover, it's like if you move the Maya out, it basically removes the egoic attachment. And then it can be offered to the divine.
I like that.
Which is very hard to do. When you look at, like, you know, I guess I should put this on here for people that hear it. There's a really active Facebook community that Mark was mentioning, and now it's just moved over to a fan page for this work under my name. And people write a lot of this kind of stuff, and you can read it, like they'll go, my, you know, these are my desires, and I want to know when they're going to happen, and tell me when I can get everything I've been wanting. And I'll usually say, read the book, because what may happen to you is you'll suddenly want the divine's highest desires for you, which may well turn out to have some mix with the ego's desires, but some mix not.
That's wonderful. I'm so excited about this work. I can't wait to go out and get the book myself.
Yeah, I can tell you're completely attuned to it. It's really lovely.
I have a question for you, Mark. And it's regarding, you basically had said initially in the beginning that, you know, lots of times the way a lot of people are taught different manifestations or how to do manifesting, it almost comes down to that creating that list of the ego.
Yes.
And you went a little bit further on in the discussions where you said, you know, yes, but one of the tools you can use is really to talk about the dream house and put it into the God box. So what is the difference in those two? I mean, I guess when you're talking about putting something in the God box, are you basically, I know for a lot of some of the teachers out there, when they do talk about manifesting, they talk about, well, don't get too detailed because you don't want to tie the hands of the universe or God or divine. You really just want to
right.
leave it open, like, you know, bring me, you know, lots of times if I do create that ego list,
yeah.
I'll even write on it this or something better.
Right.
You know,
yeah. It's a good question. You know, the thing with all of this is, you know, somebody will talk to me about intention and they'll say, well, what do you do? Do you just lay around and say, whatever you want, God, how will God know what to bring? And I'll always say, you got to be kidding. How did the divine ever create you in the first place? And how did the divine ever create any of this? So to me, the idea, it's coming out of the ego mind, that if you don't tell the divine what you need or what to bring, the divine is somehow going to walk around in a state of addled confusion. However, I do think intention is really powerful. But to me, like, my intention, and a lot of people hanging out in the Facebook community are doing this now, the intention I use is, my intention is to want the divine's will, is to wish the highest that the divine wishes. And a lot of times I'll say, you know, my intention is that the divine's dreams come true. And for my life, whatever that is, which to me is extremely different than thinking I have to tell God what to bring or God's going to be confused, because I don't actually want what my ego can dream up. You know, when that country western song about thank heavens for unanswered prayers, there was a thread once on Facebook. I don't know if you were there, Mark, when it happened, because it was a while ago, but it was very funny. It was about people started writing all the things they manifested, and they were like, and now how the heck do I give it back? I manifested it, now what do I do? Because that can be, not that any of this is wrong, but this idea, when the ego takes the wheel, either sometimes the divine blocks it anyway, because it's like, wow, this is not what the soul needs for its own development right now, so it literally blocks it. Or the other way is sometimes it brings it, and you're going, wow, now I have this person in my life that isn't necessarily what I needed right now, because I just hammered at the universe until I got it. So, and I did a lot of that in my 20s and 30s, the trail of wreckage of everything that a powerful mind can create, but that didn't necessarily bring me any happiness. So now, to me, it's this. A woman wrote recently on the Facebook page, it was beautiful, she said, I am absolutely exhausted, and that's why I'm writing. She said, I have tried every technique in the world. I manifested a house, which I can't live in now. I manifested a relationship that I'm having to get out of now. And she was at this place where she was utterly exhausted. And she said, I may be a powerful manifester, but I never actually found out what the divine might wish for me. I only know that I'm able to go and make happen what my ego mind wants. And she just wrote from this place of exhaustion, and what's happened is she found the book, kind of like you were saying, Mark. It came out of nowhere. She reached the end of the road, and she said, I need another way to do this. And within 48 hours, Outrageous Openness came, and she's practicing this a very different way. Brings this relaxation. You stop efforting. You stop pushing. And you kind of open your hands to receive, but it's not passivity, because the right actions get shown. And I think that's another key part of it, is it gets confused with some people of, well, so you just let go and go to bed and watch the Oprah Network. And I'm like, no. You offer it, and then the actions get shown. Sometimes you just sit and wait. Sometimes you work your ass off because you get shown that that's the right action. But the attachment to outcome gets lifted.
Wow. Let me go ahead and just take a quick break, and we'll come right back with a whole bunch of questions and everything. And I have this thing I want to pose to you next, which is going to be interesting. Alrighty, you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, this is our special Saturday show. We've been doing that lately when we have special guests that we definitely want to get in sooner than later. And if you want to find out more about this show and other shows, just go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. As we've been talking for the last half hour to our great guest and author, Tasha Silver, and her website is www.toshasilver.com. So make sure to go there and check out her website. We're talking about her book, Outrageous Openings, or Openness. Make sure I say that correctly. I have to. It's, to be honest with you, I'm not totally on top of the title because, like I said, I didn't actively look for the book. It was handed to me, and I just opened it up and read it. So
yeah, that's funny, though. That's happened to a lot of people. Someone found it in a bathroom in a hotel.
So let me give you my version of the world as I understand it today. And then,
okay,
of course, as I tell people, it's not that I'm right. And if you ask me in an hour, I might have a different story. But
yeah,
you know, we basically sit down with our master teachers. We come up with contracts. We basically come into this lifetime, and we're basically taking away our memory. So we don't even remember the contracts we're supposed to achieve or the goals that we're supposed to achieve. We go through, we become the enlightened, we spend a lot of time doing all types of practices and techniques and everything to clean the vessel and try to be the clearest and the most open light we can. And, you know, through this process, our ego comes up with, you know, even in a spiritual divine way, comes up with a punch list of what we think we're supposed to do. You know, let me go over here and help these people or do something. And then we go through our challenges of ego, money, power, whatever, just like most successful spiritual teachers in the world. And, you know, eventually we get to the point that we get frustrated a lot with the process, and then we come across a book like this that really kind of tells us that, you know, what we need to do is just kind of hand everything over to the divine and, you know, to the power. So, you know, what is your comment about that process? Because it's a very interesting, I want to say it feels like a game. You know, we come here, we know what we're supposed to do, but then we're dumbed down,
yeah,
and then we don't remember, and then somehow we spend the rest of our lives trying to figure out what it is that we're supposed to do to be on our path. And, you know, so what do you think?
I think that we're saying different versions of the same thing, actually,
mm-hmm,
because I believe that too. But I think that the piece that so often gets left out is the offering over of the life to something larger than the ego. I love the teacher Ajahn Shanti. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's some people know his stuff. He's kind of a Zen teacher. And he has this great line where he says, if someone isn't careful, it's very easy to replace a regular mundane ego with a spiritual ego. And I just adore that. I love that. Because I think that's sort of the pitfall of not offering over. And to me, it's there for any of us. I'm not saying I'm exempt from that. It's that offering that keeps things clean. It's like as soon as it, to me, becomes my life, my thing, my stuff, and then it's being run by the ego mind. And the solution, to me, is very simple, although it's repetitive. It becomes like every day going, this existence actually belong to. And who am I serving? Not some guy in the sky, but this divine inside. Who am I serving? And then it's I'm a Capricorn, so this is so practical. This isn't some airy-fairy Disneyland thing. It's like, who is the body serving? So I'm just sort of offering things all the time. And sometimes I forget and I get tangled in something, like Pam was saying. And the quickest way for me to get out is to immediately say, who does this belong to? If I get hit by a car today, nothing's going with me. It's all getting left behind. So none of it belongs to me. You know, no kids, no cats, no money, no books. I'm off to the new incarnation or wherever I'm going. So this illusion that it belongs to us, to me, is one of the greatest delusions there is. And as soon as it's remembered and offered back, you know, I love also there's a line, and I'll often think this line, that most focuses, even many New Age focuses, the approach is to say, how can I get what I want from the universe? How can I get what I want from the universe? Give me the techniques. How can I make my wishes come true? As soon as you start saying, how can I serve the universe? Use me to serve you. I mean, that's a prayer I'll use a lot. I'll just say, use me. Use me. Show me what you want here. Use me. Make me empty and use me. Anyone can do that. I'm not special. As soon as that longing comes to want to use a prayer like that, a different vibration opens up. And I also think of it when, like, people will say to me, they'll go, well, if I don't know what I want to create, the universe won't know how to create it. This is, to me, one of the great myths that's in the manifesting world. And I'll be like, you don't have to know anything about what you want to create once you say you want to be used by the universe. That's the great freedom, because it flips the whole thing on its head. It moves it out of, how can I use you? How can I turn the universe into Costco to go shopping? And how can I be a vessel for the universe to use me? Anyone can say that. Mm-hmm. And you know what's really fun is to say this to kids. Kids get it right away. I said it to a 5-year-old and she was like, yes, yes, I get used all the time to do things. Because they're with that force of love, they feel it. You know, they haven't been told, go make it all happen yet.
Wow.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's so many things I want to ask about, and I don't want to run out of time.
Well, you can always have me back again, because you guys are asking the best questions in the world. So.
Okay, so first I want to say that, you know, the body has 60 trillion reactions every second that runs, you know, there's this divinity that runs all of this, all of these reactions in the body without our awareness, without our control.
Yeah.
We breathe, our heart beats, we're thinking thoughts, we're digesting food, we're, you know, there's so many things going on all at one time that, you know, I teach this concept of creation, which is fascinating that I'm talking to you about this today, because whenever I teach someone, okay, you can't want anything you don't already have, so you just put it out there. And then you add, after you get your body to feel this is a reality, you add, I am open to receive this or something better that's related to my higher good. And so you put the intention there, and then you release it to the universe, like, I don't have to have this. Because once you put a pull on it, it often just pulls it away from you. Or it gives you something that you don't really want. I wanted to add that, but also, and the most important thing is I wanted to talk about love. Because the concept of poems of the divine beloved completely fascinates me. This concept of turning your life over to this divinity is the perfect example of that, which is what you just said. Let's talk for a minute about how do you get to a point where you look around you and instead of seeing what's wrong, and women fall into this so much even more than men do, instead of seeing what's wrong, what you can fix, the imperfections of life, instead of seeing that, you see perfection and beauty and love.
Well, the question
is how do you get there?
Well, but I would say again, the question, how do you get there, believes that there's a
journey.
To me, the act of offering, once you say, this life no longer belongs to me, this stuff isn't for everybody. That's also the other thing I have to say, is like, I really believe this, like souls come, and I know you guys already believe this, but souls come for very different purposes. And I do think some souls absolutely come, like kids in a sandbox, to say, how many things can I make out of my ego mind? This would be a great fun to learn that in a given incarnation, and I'm not trying to put that down. All I'm saying is after a while, after many incarnations, a soul gets freaking exhausted, and it says, wow, I want to know what happens when this great force of love obliterates the ego mind's list of shopping items and begins to take over. And that's actually what all the Sufi poets wrote about, which is why I love that you keep bringing that up, because those really are my greatest teachers, were Hafez and Rumi and Kabir and, Laleshwari from India, a lot of the Indian Bhakti poets. This is what all those poets wrote about, except it wasn't just back hundreds of centuries ago. It's now. It's available to anybody. To me, it's the prayer. It's not a trick that the mind can figure out. It's when the soul gets exhausted or the personality gets exhausted and finally says, all right, I know how to manifest blah, 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 blah. Who cares anymore? And I think what happened for me, to be very honest, I've written about it on Facebook, is that I had a memory of a past life that I was very good, if you want to value that, at making anything happen. And I made a ton of money, and I was very famous, and I had an amazing partner, and I had all this stuff. And I spent that life chasing all that stuff and getting it. And I got to the end of the life, and I had enormous remorse, enormous, because there was nothing wrong with all that, but I hadn't done what I'd come for, which was to let God take over. I'd never once in that life said, God, take over me. And that to me is very, very different than just this or something better, because that's still within the confines of the ego's list.
Right.
Very different when it becomes take over this existence. This belongs to you. And it's very, very different. So all I would say is the very first step is that prayer. And that within that, a lot of the stuff I've been creating, there's a lot of MP3s on my website also that go into a lot of very specific ways to do that. So it becomes very practical. Like there's one on there called Make Your Life an Offering. And they really go through, how do you do this? Because I don't think I'm special. Anyone can do it. I think it comes from a state of exhaustion when you get to the end of finding it interesting to see what the ego can create.
Really nice, lovely. Can you, and I don't know if you're set up to do this, Tosha, but the new book, Make Me Your Own, Poems of the Divine Beloved. Do you have that book with you?
You know what's so funny? We got this whole psychic thing going on between the three of us here. I had just opened to a poem I wanted to read you guys.
Good.
Wow.
So, and I really thought of it based on what you just said, Pam, so I'm going to read it. It's called Coconut. I guess I should preface this to say, for people that read Outrageous Openness, you'll know I mentioned coconuts in it because in India there's a way that you can offer a coconut to, you can offer a problem to the divine by breaking a coconut. So it's called Coconut. Don't tell me how well you conjure, dream, or list your wishes for ghosts to grant on full moons, or how you manifested that mate in a month, or that parking space in a jam, or how you always get whatever you want, whenever you want it. Because, honey, I still don't care. You can spend a whole life chasing this or that, when instead, you could be a coconut, cracked by God's own hand, and splashed on this earth like holy milk.
Wow.
Ah, lovely.
Can I, you know, we're kind of heading towards the end of the show, but I wanted to kind of touch on a lot of what you learned from doing all the readings, and that is, I know we talked about it, and I even talked about my own addiction to looking outside of myself for guidance or not going and surrendering. Tell me a lot of what you learned about, you know, doing all those readings and just what is it that you see in people and, you know, which led you, of course, to writing the book.
Yeah, and I have to say, I still get readings from time to time. I'm not trying to say this like there's, you know, I think readings are bad. I actually still give readings from time to time, although I don't do astrology anymore. But I think it's if there's a reader of value, they reconnect you inside. That to me is I think the foundation. And what was happening, I always tried to read that way because, you know, to me that I was watching the trail of wreckage of people coming to me sometimes from other readings saying, so-and-so said, I'll never have a relationship that I wish, or so on, you know, these terrible predictions that, of course, can be self-fulfilling sometimes because somebody's hearing negativity. So I think a good reader really reconnects people to maybe something they've forgotten on the inside. Nonetheless, having said that, I think the missing piece is that there is this 24/7 reader on the inside that's the intuitive guidance, and that it, what I realized was happening, in a way I started to feel as if I was enabling people because I was making it so that, you know, many of the people that especially were calling me all the time, really, there was no need. There was no need to go inside because it was just sort of like, okay, I'll go through and I'll help you know what to do. And after a certain point, it really, I started to realize I was actually crippling people in a sense. And instead really going, wow, there's a way that as, especially with the techniques that are in Outrageous Openness, where you're saying the perfect whatever is already picked. Like somebody would call me and they would say, I'm going to give you a list. I remember, this is a funny story, this woman called me once and she was very, very worried about all of these natural disasters that are happening. And she said, I'm going to give you a list of 20 cities I'm thinking of moving to, and can you use your cards and help me figure out the safest, the place to be safe? And I realized, that was one of the turning point readings at the end. I finally said to her, look, you do realize that this isn't about going through 20 cities with my tarot cards. This is about you building a relationship to your own inner divinity, knowing that that divinity will absolutely take you to the place that you can be of the greatest use and where you are meant to be. And that, in fact, if you make these decisions out of fear, that's actually where you're the most likely to do something crazy. In fact, I've got a story in Outrageous Openness about this guy who he moves to the bottom of an active volcano because he's so scared of earthquakes, he just moves to a volcano. So it's like, to me, the fear is the, right, is the driver. As soon as you build that relationship to that inner force, it's amazing what can happen. A good reader once said to me, there was a guy who was a really good reader in my 20s, and he said, you know, you don't have to worry. I was worried about getting on a plane. And he said, you don't have to worry. If you listen to your voice inside, and it's very developed, your body won't even let you get on that plane if you're not meant to. You're going to cancel at the last minute. And I'll never forget when he said that, because it so has turned out to be true over and over. As soon as you're listening, you know, if you're not meant to be there, you're simply not going to be there. So that's now how I see a lot of this, is if it's a very good reader, they get you connected on that level, but many don't focus that way, and that these tools are absolutely available on the inside. And that these books are really, especially the first book, is just packed with tools for kind of how to be your own reader. And also I have on the website, on the audio, there are several MP3s on how to listen to that psychic voice inside.
So, you know, as you've walked this path yourself, you know, and I think you kind of summarized this probably about 10 minutes ago, what do you think is the biggest lesson that you've learned so far, especially with the creation of this book?
You know, actually, it's so funny, because the first thing that popped up in my head, I don't know if there was just one, but I was just thinking, you can't make everybody happy. And I think for me, that actually has, I believe we're rising, and I actually think that's been one of the most profoundly liberating things about this route, is that once, and especially, you know, when Pam was talking the thing about women and the ways women are acculturated into doing things, you know, we're taught so much about having to please everybody and having to put everybody else's needs first. And as this route genuinely unfolds of offering over to the divine, you know, not that kind of, oh, we'll just dance in a circle and throw rose petals to the goddess and think of things that we all want in our lives. Not that, but a genuine where you really are saying to divinity, take me over, pulverize me, if need be, use this vessel the way you wish, that what starts to happen is you care a lot less about what other people think, which for me has been unbelievably liberating. That ruled my life for, you know, many, many years. And believe me, when I stopped giving readings, I had lots of people mad because I was their mommy. And when I stopped, when I started, you know, really focusing this way, of course, many, many people loved it because it was a godsend. But there were people that were like, wow, what happened to the old days where you would just tell us what transit was next? Why are you telling us things now? Like, go inside and listen to the divine. She's waiting to show you. There were a lot of people that didn't like that. They're coming around now. And this freedom to be able to go, if you belong to that inner wisdom, you actually can tell the truth. You can tell your own truth, and some people will love it because that's what they're waiting for, and then they can find you. And then there will be people that don't, and that's okay. And that's fine, too. And that, believe it or not, is not the answer I expected to give you, but really what's true.
It works. Hey, Pam, why don't you jump in with one last question as we wrap up the show?
Okay. And I suppose the one thing that keeps popping back up into my consciousness here while we're talking is, you know, I asked you earlier about how do you get to the level of divinity, and of course your answer was, well, you don't get there. There's no journey there. You already are that. However, for most of our audience, I think I know people well enough, and I know you do too, to know that most people do not have the focus there. They're wrapped up in their obligations and their duties and their roles in life. And as they're moving through life, other than saying to yourself, okay, I'm going to turn this over to divinity. I'm going to release this. I'm going to ask to be used by the divine beloved rather than trying to force my way through. That's a lovely perspective. I also know
wait,
that it
but Pam,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think you partly may be asking this because you haven't read the book yet. And that's
okay.
The first thing I would say is actually, I'm so practical. I'm really like, believe it or not, the world's least, you know, oh, just close your eyes and click your heels and call in God and all will be well. Definitely, and you already are God, so let it be, because I was on a path for 15 years where everyone was saying, well, you already are God, and I would be like, so what? I'm still suffering. Nobody's
exactly.
telling me
that's,
how to shift
that's
this.
That's really what the question is.
I understand that, and what I'm saying is if you read the book, seriously, the act of this, it unfolds over a process of constant
mm-hmm.
invitation. Constant invitation of the divine into every even seemingly mundane area of your life. So let's say, you know, I have a story in the book about the phone company, and I'm on with the phone company, and they're their total nightmare, and I'm on there, and they're passing me from department to department, and I'm calling in the divine, and I'm saying, take over this phone call. Bring the person I need to talk to. Bring what you wish it to happen in this phone call. And it's just like a very seemingly mundane example. All of a sudden, a phone call to the, you know, AT&T becomes a whole other experience. Standing in line, you know, at Walgreens becomes a whole other experience. Everything changes. So it's not actually just like, oh, yeah, you're the divine, make the best of it. Nobody, I totally know what you're asking, because very few people give the practical way to do this, and it actually, it's in two things. It's in outrageous openness, if people get it and really read it through. I'd love to talk to you after you've read it, because I think you'll be like, oh, okay, I get it. It's really in there. And it's also in the MP3 that's on my website of Make Your Life an Offering. There's more layers of it. But it's actually comes out of the practice of taking each individual event as it occurs and including
mm-hmm.
the divine in it. Because what most people do is they'll say, oh, yeah, I have my prayer and meditation time. Or if you're a yoga person like me, I roll out my mat and, you know, they'll say, I roll out my mat, I do my vinyasa practice, and then I roll the mat back up and I become a lunatic again. And it's like, no, that doesn't have to happen. You roll the mat back up, and then you're getting your car and you're inviting the divine in again. Every
right.
moment it becomes, it'll make so much more sense, I believe, once you read the book or anyone listening reads the book. You're actually inviting this force to take over every mundane detail all day long to
okay.
whatever extent you can. Eventually it becomes reflexive. It just happens on its own.
I understand. And I think that's really lovely. Thank you for that tip.
You guys are fabulous. I actually have not enjoyed an interview this much in a while. You guys are amazing.
Thank you so much. So
all right,
lovely.
Well, thank you for being on. And as always, thank you, Pam, for being on. And for people who are just tuning in, make sure to go to our website. You'll find links to the book and everything. Go out and pick up the book. It will change your life. And Tasha, it is great having you on. Thank you so much, and I want to just say good night to everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everyone. Thank you, Tosha.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Take care.
life is but a dream.